The sound of hammering woke Frank the next morning. When he came down from the loft, he found that Culverhouse was already knocking together a coffin for Carl Lanigan.
Sorry if I disturbed you, Marshal.
No, that's fine. Some chores just won't wait.
Yeah, that's sure true in the undertaking business. You heading out to Sandine's?
Yeah, as soon as I had some breakfast.
Yeah, maybe some of us ought to ride with you. Mayor Donahue and I were talking about it, and if Sandine wants you dead, you'll be putting yourself in a heap of danger by riding out to his ranch alone. He probably wouldn't try anything if there were several of us from town there with you.
Nah, I don't believe Sandine's gonna try anything. He'll be aware that all of you know I've ridden out there, and if I disappear, suspicion will fall on him right away. The disappearance of a marshal might be enough to bring outside law in here. Sandine won't want that. At least not yet.
You sure about that?
Last time I checked, nothing in life was 100% sure, but I'm not worried about Sandine trying anything today.
Well, your funeral, but I'd just as soon not have to do the burying.
Don't worry about that. If Sandine did succeed in killing me, the body would never be found. He'd see to that.
That's sort of a grim way to look at it.
The hazard of the profession, I guess.
Being a lawman, you mean?
Yeah.
An hour after leaving the settlement, Frank came in sight of the scattering of buildings that was Ed Sandine's property. The largest was a sprawling one-story adobe dwelling, constructed in the Spanish style with red tile roofs and wrought iron gates in the wall around an inner courtyard. Sandine hadn't started this ranch, but had bought it from someone else, and the place could have had other owners before that. From the looks of it, the original settler had probably been a hacendado from south of the border. Someone had spotted him coming. Several men came out of the bunkhouse. One of the wrought iron gates in the wall around the main house swung open. Sandine and Vern Riley stepped out. Riley had his shotgun tucked under his arm, but Sandine appeared to be unarmed. He wore whipcord trousers and a white shirt open at the throat. He regarded his visitor coolly as Frank reined Stormy to a halt. The five men who had come from the bunkhouse, hard cases who were almost as cold-eyed and dangerous-looking as Vern Riley, stood to Frank's right, about 15 feet away.
Morgan, something I can do for you? Or are you just visiting?
I brought some news out here for you from town, Sandine. Carl Lanigan's dead.
Huh. And why would that be of any interest to me?
Lanigan works for you, doesn't he? Thought since he was one of your riders, you'd want to see to it that he got a proper burial.
Well, I sure would, if he still worked for me. I gave Lanigan his time a couple of nights ago, after he got into that fight with you in San Remo.
You did?
That's right. I don't want a man on my payroll who brawls with lawmen. Isn't that exactly what I told Lanigan, Vern?
That's right, boss. That's what you told him.
That's funny. Because before he died, Lanigan told me he was still working for you, Sandine.
He was lying. Simple as that. Carl probably had a grudge against me because I dismissed him. How'd he die?
He tried to kill me. We traded shots, and then during the ruckus that came after that, he fell on his own knife.
Damn shame. But it's got nothing to do with me, Morgan. You can bury Lanigan in a pauper's grave as far as I'm concerned.
That the way you feel about all your men when they fail at the errands you send them on?
You're whistling up the wrong tree, Morgan. I told you I didn't have anything to do with Lanigan trying to kill you. Now, if there's nothing else, I got a ranch to run.
No, that's all.
So long, then. Maybe I'll see you in San Remo.
Count on it.
Then Frank turned Stormy and rode slowly away from the ranch house. Again, he could feel that imaginary target itching on his back. In the hour since Frank had left Sandine's ranch, the weather had picked up severely. With so many tall pines around, lightning was always a danger. And while many areas of Arizona territory were bone dry most of the time, up here in this rugged range country, a storm could turn quickly into a downpour. Frank had gotten wet enough from that dunking in the river the night before. He didn't have any desire to get soaked by rain now.
Come on, Stormy. Let's find somewhere to get out of this blasted weather.
The air felt strange, as if heavily charged by some force. Frank estimated that he was still a mile or so away from the Lazy F ranch house. As the wind buffeted him, and he had to ride with one hand on his head to hold his hat on, he began to think that he wouldn't reach Flynn's before the storm hit.
Damn.
Frank's head jerked up. He hadn't been hit, and neither had Stormy. He didn't even know if the shot had been aimed at him. All he could be sure of was that the sharp report had come from in front of him somewhere.
Let's go, big fella.
It was hard to see clearly through the sluicing rain, but as he drew nearer, a riderless horse suddenly loomed up and bolted past him. In the brief look he got, Frank didn't see any blood on the saddle, but that didn't mean anything. It was raining hard enough to wash away any blood that had been spilled. Up ahead was a deadfall at the edge of the trail. Frank saw a man standing behind the fallen tree, looking down at something. Frank couldn't make out any details, except that the man wore a yellow slicker much like his. The man must have heard Stormy's hoofbeats, because he turned sharply toward Frank. Frank saw his hand come up with a gun in it. The bullet raked Stormy's neck, and then clipped the top of Frank's left shoulder with stunning impact. Frank reeled in the saddle and almost fell, but he managed to hang on and lift his gun. The man turned and ran, and from the way he scampered nimbly up the hillside, Frank knew none of his shots had found their target. He tried to turn Stormy to head up the rise after the gunman, but the horse's hooves slipped on the trail, which had been turned muddy by the torrential rain. As Stormy jolted to the side, Frank tried to grab for the horn with his left arm, but it was numb from the bullet graze on his shoulder. He felt himself falling, and instinctively kicked his feet free from the stirrups.
Damn, lost him again.
The man had been looking at something behind that deadfall, Frank recalled. With a bad feeling inside him, he pushed himself to his feet and stumbled along the trail toward the fallen tree. Frank came around the end of the big log and stopped short. A man lay there on his back, concealed from Frank's sight until now. Blood welled from the bullet holes in his chest, and the rain diluted the crimson into pink streams. The man's hat had fallen off, revealing thick white hair. His tanned, weathered face was contorted in deep trenches of shock and pain. Frank was looking down at Howard Flynn. The man was either dead or soon would be. Frank saw several riders pounding toward him from the direction of the Lazy F headquarters. He couldn't be sure, but he thought one of them was Jeff Buxton. The others were bound to be more of Flynn's crew. And here Frank stood over the body of Howard Flynn himself, gun in hand, three bullets gone from the Colt's cylinder, three blood-leaking holes in Flynn's chest. Buxton drew his gun and pointed it at Frank.
Don't move, you son of a bitch! Try anything and I'll blow your damn head off!
Take it easy, Buxton. I didn't shoot your boss.
Then who in blazes did? You're the only one here!
Another man traded shots with Flynn. I rode up right afterward and saw him. He threw a shot at me, then headed for the tall and uncut. I was winged. Took a tumble off my horse when it slipped in the mud. So I wasn't able to go after him.
Mr. Flynn could have grazed you. We heard shots from two different guns, and I recognize the sound of that old Remington of his.
That other man shot Flynn, I tell you, not me. Why in the world would I want to kill him? We parted on decent terms yesterday, if you'll just remember, Buxton.
Maybe? Or maybe you've been play-acting all along, Morgan, and really are working for Sandine. You've got a rep as a gunfighter, and that kind of man usually rides for whoever's willing to pay the most.
That's crazy. Sandine hates me because I refuse to work for him. Not only that, but I killed several of his men, including Carl Lanigan last night.
You can talk all you want, but it don't change what I saw with my own eyes. Shut your hog leg and hand it over.
Frank handed his gun, butt first, to Buxton. Meanwhile, Caleb Glover had dismounted and knelt beside Flynn's body. He moved the cattleman's shirt aside to get a look at the wounds.
Three empty shells. Damn it, Morgan, if that's not proof!
I fired those three shots at the man who really killed Flynn.
The boss ain't dead. He's still alive.
That got everyone's attention. Frank turned toward Flynn and saw that the old man's eyes were open. They were unfocused, however, and he was only barely conscious. His head moved a little from side to side as his mouth opened and closed, and he struggled to breathe.
Boss! Boss! Can you hear me?
Shot!
Who shot you, boss? Can you tell me? Who did this to you?
Slicker! Yellow Slicker!
Buxton, Glover, and the other Lazy F men looked at Frank, who stood there wearing a yellow slicker.
The other man had on a yellow slicker, too. Pretty much like this one. Hell, half the men in this country wear one of them when it rains. A couple of you are wearing them right now.
Yeah, but we were all together. That does it. I've heard all I need to hear. You're gonna swing for this, Morgan.
I tell you.
Shut up! I don't want to hear any more of your lies. Caleb, get back to the house as quick as you can and bring the wagon back to the boss. Maybe we can patch him up.
No need for hurrying now. Poor Mr. Flynn's gone. Those were his last words.
A dying man's last words. You don't get any better proof than that.
Except in this case, you're wrong. You're letting the real killer get away.
I'm gonna enjoy seeing you dance the end of a rope, Morgan.
As Glover wearily stood up from where he had knelt beside Flynn, Frank suddenly lunged behind him. At the same time, his right hand plucked the Colt from the holster on Glover's hip. The gun rose menacingly.
Hold your fire!
Drop your guns!
Mister, you're making the worst mistake of your life!
No, the worst mistake could be letting you railroad me for something I didn't do. Now drop them, damn it!
Don't you listen to him, Buck. You killed the boss. You go ahead and ventilate him, and don't worry about me.
You know I can't do that, Caleb. For one thing, Mary Elizabeth would never forgive me if I got you killed. You heard Morgan, boys! Drop him!
Buxton started by letting his own pistol fall to the ground. Slowly, reluctantly, the other men dropped their pistols.
Now back your horses away. I want you at least 100 yards up the trail before I turn Glover loose.
You can't get away. We know every foot of this country. We'll hunt you down like the lobo wolf you are, Morgan.
Just do what I told you and nobody will have to get hurt.
Too late for that.
Back off.
Buxton and the other men backed their horses for several yards, then turned and rode along the muddy trail in the direction they had come from.
That's far enough. Now dismount and stampede those horses.
Damn you, Morgan!
Do it!
The men swung down from their horses and slapped the animals on the rumps with their hats.
Mr. Morgan, you're a dead man. I hope you know that.
Listen to me, Glover. Sorry I had to grab you like this. I'd rather face my trouble straight on. But Buxton wasn't gonna believe me no matter what I said.
Why should he? Why should any of us?
Because I'm telling you the truth. I swear, Glover, I didn't shoot Flynn. It happened just the way I said. There's another man in a yellow slicker. He had a horse tied somewhere up the hill. I tell you to go look for those tracks. But the rain will have washed them away by now.
Mighty convenient rain, ain't it?
Not for me. But one way or another, I'm gonna find out who killed Flynn. And I'll prove it. All I need is a little time.
You won't get it. Buck meant what he said. Every man on a lazy F is gonna be hunting you now, Morgan. You won't get away. Bet if you just give up and take what you got coming to you.
I can't do that.
Stormy came trotting over to Frank.
Sorry about this, Glover. Believe that if you don't believe anything else I've said.
It was a fuming mad Jeff Buxton who led the sorry procession into the yard in front of the big house around noon. As they drew rein in front of the house, Caleb Glover leaned over to him.
I sure don't envy you the job you got coming, Buck. That little gal and the boss were close. Especially considering she ain't been out here all that long.
Yeah, I know. How's your head?
Hurts like blazes. Got a nice goose egg up there, too. But I reckon I'll be all right. This old noggin of mine is pretty hard. And if I didn't know better, I'd say that Morgan was being careful not to hit me too hard.
Why would a gunslinging bastard like that care who he hurts?
You know, Buck, he told me again that he didn't shoot the boss.
You saw the evidence with your own eyes.
Yeah. Sometimes there's more than one way of looking at the things you see.
Not to me. Wait a few minutes to give me a chance to talk to Miss Laura. Then a couple of you boys bring the boss's body into the parlor.
Buck went up the steps and into the house. He didn't know where Laura was, but he found her a moment later in the kitchen, where she was talking to AC Ducey.
Hello, Jeff.
Miss Laura, I reckon you'd better sit down. I got some mighty bad news for you.
My goodness. What is it, Jeff?
There ain't no good way to tell you this, so I'll just say it straight out. Your uncle's dead. Frank Morgan shot him.
Oh. Uncle Howard? Uncle Howard is dead?
I'm afraid so. We've got his body outside. Some of the boys will bring him into the parlor. AC Ducey, get a blanket and spread it on the divan in there. The boss's clothes are wet from the rain. I'm sure sorry, Miss Laura.
For the next few minutes, there was considerable scrambling around in the house as Laura continued to sit in the kitchen and cry. Then Glover came in.
We got the boss laid out in the parlor, Buck.
I have to see him.
Many of the ranch hands had crowded into the parlor and gathered around the divan where Flynn's body was laid out. He was wrapped in a blanket so that only his face was visible. The bloody ruin of his chest was hidden from Laura, and Buxton was glad of that. He led Laura over to the divan and stood beside her, still gripping her arm, being careful not to hold her too tightly.
Oh, Uncle Howard! I'm so sorry. You said Frank Morgan did this.
We found him standing over the boss's body, the gun still in his hand.
Doesn't sound like something Mr. Morgan would do. When I met him, he didn't seem like a cold-blooded killer. But if you found him like that, I want you to find him, Jeff. I want you to find him and bring him to justice.
That's just exactly what I plan on doing, Miss Laura.
Alonzo Hightower was pretty bored as he stood behind the bar in the Mugione Saloon, lazily polishing the hardwood with a damp rag. He had sent his bartender home and was taking care of the saloon's two customers himself. That's when he noticed some movement on the clear streets outside. The man who rode the horse was a stranger, all right, dressed in black from head to toe. The broad brim of the black hat obscured the stranger's features even more. Hightower caught a glimpse of a hawk nose, and he thought the man had red hair, but wasn't sure about that. But even without being able to see the stranger very well, something about him struck a chord in Hightower, and the sound it produced wasn't a pleasant one. The rain had cooled things off considerably, but now an actual chill went through the saloon keeper, as if the temperature had dropped another 20 degrees in a matter of a second. The man rode slowly out of sight. Hightower swallowed hard and looked over at Donahue.
You saw him too, didn't you?
You mean that fella dressed all in black? Yeah, of course I saw him. Why wouldn't I have seen him? He was real, wasn't he? I mean, he wasn't some sort of haunt or something, was he?
Oh, seemed real enough to me. Sure was a mean-looking fella, though.
Yeah. Don't know what it was about him. He was just another hombre, but at the same time, he was...
spooky.
That's right. That's it exactly. Spooky.
Why'd you reckon he just looked in the door and didn't come in here?
If I had to guess, I'd say he was looking for somebody. And I don't know about you, Lonzo, but I'm damn glad the fella he was looking for ain't in here.
Mitch Kite had been running the Verde Saloon for Ed Sandine for about a year, ever since Sandine had bought it from Ford Fargo, who had tired of Arizona and headed for California.
Can I help you, stranger?
The stranger didn't appear too menacing as he walked toward the table, except for the cold glint in his eyes that reminded Kite of a rattlesnake's eyes, and the way that his hand never strayed far from the stag-butted revolver on his hip under the long black coat, and the air of coiled violence just waiting to be unleashed. Kite leaned over to the bar's whore, Sweet Susie, who sat next to him at the table.
Go ahead and get out of here.
You're the fella who runs this place.
That's right. Something I can do for you?
I'm looking for a man. His name is Frank Morgan.
Now sit down and have a drink, my friend. You've come to the right place. As of a couple days ago, Frank Morgan is now the Marshal of San Remo.
Is that so?
Some manhunters, and there was no doubt in Kite's mind that that was what this stranger was, might have been upset to discover that their quarry was packing a lawman's badge. But Kite had the feeling it wouldn't matter to the stranger that the man he had come to San Remo to kill now wore a tin star. Not one damned bit. Chilled, wet, and miserable, Frank huddled in a tiny cave in the hills as night fell. He had found the place around mid-afternoon, more of a niche in the side of a hill, tucked away underneath a cliff that bulged out above it. The cave was barely big enough for both Frank and Stormy, but they were out of the rain here, and more importantly, out of sight of anybody who came looking for them. Frank knew he had given Buxton and the other Lazy F hands the slip earlier in the day. He had gotten up high enough to watch his back trail, and although he had spotted the riders twice, he could tell from the way they were wandering around that they didn't have any real idea where he was. He had waited until they were gone, then resumed his climb toward the Mogollon Rim. Just because Buxton and the other men had finally turned back didn't mean that Frank was in the clear, and he knew it. Buxton would have wanted to get Howard Flynn's body back to the ranch house and tell the cattleman's niece what had happened. But Frank had a feeling that once Buxton had attended to that grim chore, the ranch foreman would be back out on the range again, searching for the man he believed to be Flynn's murderer. Frank had taken off his slicker, but his damp clothing hadn't really dried much during the afternoon. Now it began to. Earlier, Frank had worked the left shoulder of his shirt down so that he could take a look at the bullet wound. That hadn't been easy, since the blood had dried partially and the cloth wanted to stick. But he had been careful about freeing it and hadn't done any more damage. The graze was similar to the one Laura Flynn had received on her arm from the bushwhacking during the attack the day before. Frank managed to bind the wound with some fresh bandages from his pack. Then he went and did the same for Stormy, who had also been grazed by the bullet that had hit his shoulder.
Yeah, it was bad, all right. I'm sorry, fella.
After Frank bandaged Stormy, he rolled up in his blankets and tried to go to sleep. But something besides hunger kept him awake. The wheels of his brain were spinning rapidly as he tried to sort out everything that had happened and what it was all going to mean. First and foremost, he was a fugitive now, and whatever course of action he followed, he would have to take into account the fact that Buxton and the other Lazy F punchers would be combing these hills for him. Frank had suspected they would shoot on sight, too, if they caught as much as a glimpse of him. Under the circumstances, he couldn't blame them. Not that he was going to sit back and let them hunt him down and kill him. Not by a long shot. There had to be a way to find out who the mysterious gunman in the yellow slicker was and prove it. Frank's gut told him that Sandine was behind Howard Flynn's murder. Sandine probably hadn't pulled the trigger himself, but one of his men almost certainly had. Frank closed his eyes and mulled it over. Sandine hated him, no doubt about that, and had sent Lanigan to try to kill him. After Frank's visit to Saber, Sandine could have put another of those hired killers on his trail. Maybe one of the gun throwers Frank had seen at the ranch, or even Vern Riley himself. Say it was Riley, Frank thought. Riley could have followed him away from the Saber and maybe circled around and gotten in front of him to set up an ambush. But then, before Frank could come along to be bushwhacked, who had ridden up but Howard Flynn himself, an even bigger enemy of Sandine's than the Drifter? Riley, or whoever the gunman really was, had spotted Flynn and had also known that Frank was nearby, heading in that direction. So he guns down Flynn in hopes that Frank would come along and be caught by Flynn's riders and blamed for the killing. That was too much to believe. No one could have guaranteed that Buxton and the others would ride up just then and jump to all the wrong conclusions. More than likely, the bushwhacker had seized the opportunity to kill Flynn and planned to then dry gulch Frank as well. But Frank had ruined that by coming along too soon and chasing him off. Which meant that the real killer was out there, somewhere. And as long as Frank was free, there was a chance he would find the killer and turn this whole crazy situation on its head. All Frank had to do was avoid being captured or killed by the men hunting him.
All I have to do is find a way to beat 50 angry cowboys that are looking to kill me on sight. Well, it could be worse.
The next morning, Frank and Stormy stepped out into the sunlight, and it felt awfully good to do so. As Frank looked around at the hills and the dark rim of the forbidding mesa several miles to the northeast, he realized that he didn't exactly know where he was. Frank figured he could orient himself quickly enough, though, by using the Mogollon Rim as a landmark. If he headed west, which meant keeping the rim roughly behind him, sooner or later he would hit the Verde River. The best thing for him to do now, Frank decided, was to get back to San Remo and try to slip into the settlement without anybody seeing him. But then another worry began to gnaw at Frank's thoughts. With everybody on the Lazy F up in arms about what had happened to Flynn, the ranch headquarters might be deserted except for Laura and A.C. Ducey. Sandine and his crew would never have a better opportunity to ride in and take over. Sandine could even claim that he was doing it to protect Laura now that her uncle was dead and she was alone. Folks around here would know better, but it might be a convincing story to outsiders. Buxton wouldn't take that lying down. not the way he felt about the Lazy F and about Laura Flynn. There would be gunplay for sure if Sandine tried such a move. Howard Flynn's death had lit the fuse on the powder keg that was the Mugione country, and with the odds stacked against him the way they were, Frank didn't see any way he could prevent the explosion that would blow the whole range to Kingdom Come, but he was sure as hell going to give it a try. Jeff Buxton was all too aware of how close Laura Flynn was sitting beside him on the wagon seat. This was a tragic occasion, he reminded himself, and he shouldn't be thinking about how from time to time her arm brushed his, and certainly not about how their knees bumped when the wagon jolted over a particularly rough spot in the trail. After all, her uncle's body was lying back there behind them in the wagon bed, only a couple of feet away. It was a solemn procession that made its way from the Lazy F toward San Remo this morning. Buxton had left only a few men behind at the ranch, and they had protested at being forced to miss the boss's funeral. But Buxton wasn't going to leave the spread completely unprotected, not as long as that skunk Sandine was still drawing breath. Buxton was more convinced than ever that Morgan had been working for Sandine all along, and now that the Drifter had murdered Howard Flynn, Sandine would surely try to complete his land grab and take over the Lazy F. Flynn would be buried in the graveyard behind the church. That was the way he had wanted it.
What are you going to do, Jeff?
I drive on into town and see that your uncle is laid to rest properly, I reckon.
No, I mean after that. Mr. Morgan is still out there somewhere.
Don't think I don't know it. I figure I'll see you home after the service, and then some of the boys and I will get started looking for Morgan. I promised you I'd bring him to justice, and I aim to do it.
You don't plan to take all of the hands with you?
Can't do that. That's what Sandine's counting on.
You're still convinced that Ed Sandine was behind Uncle Howard's killing?
Buxton gave a slight nod of his head.
Jeff, you have to help me. Otherwise, there's no way I can get through this.
Yes, ma'am, you're the boss. It had to be Sandine's doing. Morgan's been working for him all along.
It just doesn't seem right somehow. I don't doubt what you saw, and I want you to catch Mr. Morgan and bring him to justice. But I just have a feeling that there's more to all this than we know right now.
Maybe so, but the only way we'll get any answers is by laying hands on Morgan. In the meantime, I'm not going to leave you there at the ranch by yourself. I don't trust Sandine as far as I can throw at the scoundrel.
A little while later, the solemn procession pulled up just outside of the church. Homer McCrory was waiting at the doors. He shook Laura's hand.
You have my deepest sympathy, Miss Flynn. Your uncle was one of the finest men I ever knew.
Thank you, Mr. McCrory. I appreciate everything you and the rest of the people here in San Remo are doing for Uncle Howard.
It's only fitting and proper. Jeff, are you ready to get underway?
I reckon so.
Half a dozen of the punchers lifted the coffin from the wagon and carried it into the church. The funeral service was as fine as such a sorrowful thing could be. Even though talking in front of a bunch of people scared Buxton more than fighting Apaches or rustlers ever had, the foreman got up and said some words about what a good boss and a fine man Howard Flynn had been. Vincente Delgado played a couple of hymns on his guitar, since the church's pipe organ was broken. Delgado was a Catholic, not a Baptist, but that didn't matter all that much at a moment like this, when a pillar of the community was being laid to rest. Pastor McCrory got up and preached a short sermon, and while he was doing that, Laura leaned against Buxton's shoulder and sobbed quietly. Buxton didn't look at her, but kept his eyes fixed straight ahead. After a while, though, he couldn't help but slip his arm around Laura's shoulders and hug her a little, strictly to comfort her in this, her time of grief, he told himself. Shoot, his own eyes were a little damp with tears. Howard Flynn really had been a good man and a good boss. Buxton had worked for him for almost 10 years, about half of that time as the foreman of the Lazy F. It was the best riding job he'd ever had, and the spread was his home now, always would be. Finally, the preacher wrapped things up. The pallbearers moved forward to pick up the coffin and carry it out through the back door of the church and onto the graveyard, which was only a few steps away. The mourners all followed, led by Laura and Buxton. She clutched his hand, and he laced his fingers tightly through hers. A keen-eyed man on horseback sat in the thick shadows under a stand of pines atop a hill overlooking San Remo. From where he was, he could see the mourners gathered around the grave as the preacher spoke the final words. The rider watched as those down below filed past Howard Flynn's grave and dropped dirt on the coffin. He wasn't particularly interested in the burial itself or the people who attended the service. What he hoped was that someone else would show up, not down there in the graveyard, of course, but perhaps on one of those wooded hills that gave a good view of the cemetery. The watcher lifted his eyes from the burying and slowly scanned all the territory he could see from here, looking for any sign of movement, any telltale clue that someone might be lurking nearby. Nothing. If Morgan was here, he was doing a damned good job of lying low. And of course, given Morgan's reputation and the fact that he had survived for so many years in such a dangerous profession, that was entirely possible. It didn't matter, the hunter thought with a grim smile. Sooner or later, he would find Frank Morgan. It was just a matter of time. It was early afternoon when Frank neared San Remo. He was following the trail between there and Prescott, paralleling it about 200 yards to the north and using every bit of cover he could find. Eventually, he was able to work his way to within 100 yards of the rear of Jasper Culverhouse's livery barn. Frank swung down from the saddle and let his gaze rove over the settlement. From there, he couldn't see anything except the backs of some of the buildings and a few cabins. Nobody was moving around, though, so after a while, he decided it was time to risk making a move of his own. Leading Stormy, he walked quickly toward the barn, covering the distance in only a few moments. Staying back in the shadows, Frank looked across the yard between the livery barn and the blacksmith shop. The doors in the front and back of the smithy were open to let the heat from the forge escape. Frank saw Culverhouse working at the anvil, sparks flying through the air as he smashed the heavy hammer against whatever he was fashioning. Wolf sat in the back door, his head tilted in interest, watching the burly blacksmith. Frank smiled. The wind was out of the east, or Wolf would have already caught his scent. Wolf's ears shot up, and the big cur jumped to his feet and whirled around. He bounded across the yard toward the barn and raced inside the building. Culverhouse had noticed Wolf's sudden reaction, as Frank had hoped he would. Culverhouse set his hammer aside and started quickly across the yard.
Good Lord, Frank, what are you doing here? Whole country's after you for killing Howard Flynn.
I didn't kill Flynn.
Jeff Buxton said...
Buxton's wrong. It's true enough that he and some other hands from Lazy F rode up and found me standing beside Flynn's body, holding a gun. That doesn't mean I shot him.
Buxton said you told some story about another man who was there who happened to be wearing the same sort of slicker you wore.
That's the truth. I'm convinced it was Vern Riley, or one of Sandine's other hired guns who killed Flynn. I just came along and got the blame for it.
Oh, I don't like doubting you, Frank, but that's a mighty hard story to swallow. I mean, if it's true, why'd you jump Caleb Glover and take off to the High Lonesome like you did?
Because I knew Buxton never believed me no matter how many times I told him what happened. Probably most of the other people around here wouldn't have either. I gotta have proof if I'm gonna convince anybody that I didn't kill Flynn. And I couldn't get that if I was locked up somewhere.
Why'd you come back here?
Because I need food and supplies. I'm gonna have to make myself pretty scarce around the settlement for a while. Also, I wanted to talk to you and maybe Mayor Donahue. I want somebody in these parts to know that I'm innocent. At least to shooting Howard Flynn. That's why I'm asking you to believe me, Jasper.
Well, I reckon it could have happened the way you said. Lord knows there are plenty of fellows around here who own yellow slickers. Got one myself, and I know several others in town who do. Why don't you tell me the whole story?
Frank did so, backing up to start with his visit to Sandine's ranch and Sandine's denial that he'd had anything to do with sending Carl Lanigan to kill San Remo's new marshal. By the time Frank had finished telling Culverhouse about the mysterious gunman he had swapped lead with immediately following the shooting of Howard Flynn, the blacksmith was beginning to look more convinced that he was telling the truth.
I reckon nobody could prove it didn't happen that way, but you got to admit it looked mighty bad the way Buxton and the others rode up and found you there.
Yeah, it looked bad. But it's not proof that I'm guilty.
No, it ain't. I believe you, Frank, and I'll help you if I can. What you want me to do?
If you got anything around here to eat, I could sure use some food. My backbone's about to poke out the front of my shirt.
Yeah, stomach thinks your throat's been cut, huh? Yeah, I got some grub in the back room where I sleep next to the shop. I'll fetch it for you. You just stay back here where nobody will see you, because it'd cause a hell of a commotion if folks knew you were right here in town.
Frank nodded in agreement and waited while Culverhouse brought some biscuits and a slab of salt pork and an opened can of beans from his living quarters. Frank tore eagerly into the victuals.
I'll put some coffee on the boil, too. Won't be as good as what you get down at the cafe, but...
I don't care about that, as long as it's coffee.
What are you going to do now?
My plan is basically the same one I had before. Still have to get my hands on one of Sandine's men and make him talk. But now, I not only have to get him to admit that Sandine sent Lanigan after me, but also to reveal who really killed Flynn.
That ain't gonna be easy. All those boys who ride for Sandine are tough hombres.
I'm tougher. It's my life that's at stake.
Frank spent the rest of the afternoon in Culverhouse's barn, getting some long-needed rest. He waited until it was totally dark and rode out of the barn into the night. The moon was only a thin crescent, and that was just fine with Frank. There was enough light for him to see where he was going, but not so much that he would be readily visible if anybody was looking for him. He hoped that the search for him had been called off with the coming of night. If there were a bunch of trigger-happy cowboys blundering around in the darkness, somebody would probably get shot before morning. But it wouldn't be Frank Morgan. Frank turned the Appaloosa eastward, knowing that would take him onto Sandine's range. So far, he hadn't seen or heard anyone else abroad in the darkness. But as he approached Sandine's headquarters, Stormy suddenly lifted his head, his ears pricking forward. Frank knew that something had alerted the Appaloosa, so he pulled back on the reins and brought the horse to a halt. Then he sat there in the saddle, listening intently.
Damn.
Frank reined Stormy into the thick shadows under some trees. He swung down from the saddle and stood close against the horse's side. He stayed where he was in the shadows and waited for the group of riders to pass. But when they did, a few minutes later, he was immediately struck by something odd about them. He couldn't see them all that well, since the light wasn't very good, and the men trotted their horses past at least 50 yards from where Frank was hidden. But he thought something was wrong with their faces. There were more than a dozen riders, Frank now estimated 20. They were almost all past him before he realized what had made the hair on the back of his neck stand up. They were all wearing masks. Bandanas were pulled over the bottom halves of their faces, and their hat brims were tugged down low to obscure their features even more. No posse, even an unofficial one, was going to be gallivanting around the range at night with masks over their faces. So if they weren't looking for the fugitive, where were they going? Frank didn't have an answer for that, and the question strongly stirred his curiosity. He thought about the directions involved and realized that the masked riders could have come from Sabre. And if they kept going the way they were headed, their route would take them pretty close to the headquarters of the Lazy F. They wouldn't be able to hear Stormy's hoofbeats over the sound of their own mounts, so Frank urged the Appaloosa into a brisk pace that wouldn't let him lose the trail of the men he was following. Not surprisingly, the group veered a little east of north a short time later. Now they were riding straight toward the Lazy F ranch house. Frank no longer had any doubt that was where they were going, or that they were up to no good. Being careful not to get too close, he trailed the men until they brought their mounts to a stop on a knoll overlooking the Lazy F headquarters. 100 yards behind them, Frank reined in too. Within moments, Frank had edged close enough to overhear what they were saying in low voices.
Anybody else is fair game, but she's not to come to any harm, you understand?
Sandine had sent these killers to raid the Lazy F, but didn't want anything to happen to Laura.
We'll hit the place hard and fast, then pull back. Do as much damage as we can, but remember, we're not to take it over.
Frank wasn't sure why Sandine had ordered such a hit-and-run raid on the ranch, but at the moment, the motive didn't really matter.
You got those torches?
Frank knew he had to let the people who were at the Lazy F know what was about to happen. But even as he reached the Appaloosa and vaulted into the saddle, he knew he was too late. He heard the thunder of hoofbeats as the raiders charged down the hill toward the ranch. Laura and Buck sat in the kitchen of the house, talking quietly. Despite all the tragedy, Buck sensed an even deeper bond growing between them. In the back of his mind, hopes and dreams stirred. It was a good moment, and as far as Buxton was concerned, it could have lasted a lot longer. Buck came to his feet, and without even thinking about it, his hand moved to the butt of his gun and closed around the well-worn walnut grips.
Stay here. I'll see what's going on out there.
It's my ranch. I ought to.
Stay here. That's one order I'm given.
Buck stepped out onto the porch and saw muzzle flames spurting in the darkness as a dozen or more raiders on horseback swept down the hill that overlooked the headquarters of the Lazy F. Some of them galloped into the yard between the house and the barns and the bunkhouse, firing at anything that moved. As Buxton lifted his gun and tried to draw a bead on one of the hard-riding figures, he realized with a shock that the men were masked. The masks didn't really matter. He knew they had to be some of Sandine's hired killers. Buck drew a bead on one of the men. The bastard didn't tumble off his horse, that was for sure. The rider kept going, peppering the house with bullets. Buck saw several of the marauders swinging brightly blazing torches over their heads. Horror welled up inside Buxton as he saw those torches go spinning through the air as the masked raiders flung them into the barns and onto the roof of the bunkhouse.
You bastards!
Just then, something slammed against his head and knocked him back several steps. Buck fell, but he didn't feel it as he crashed down on the planks of the porch. Blackness surged up around him, threatening to engulf him.
Jeff! Oh, God! Jeff!
Buck never even heard Laura scream as the darkness engulfed him completely.
Yeah!
Frank sent Stormy charging after the raiders. Frank knew he was only one man, but he had the advantage of surprise and could also hit the attacking gunman from the rear. He pulled his Winchester from the saddle boot as he started down the slope. At the biggest of the barns, a Lazy F puncher raced out and started firing at the raiders. The rifle came up to Frank's shoulder. Frank had scored a hit, even if he hadn't knocked the man completely out of the fight. The men with the blazing torches made good targets. Frank reined Stormy to a halt and leaped down from the Appaloosa's back so that he could aim better. He drew a bead on one of the torch wielders and pressed the trigger. The torch spun crazily in the air and fell short of the barn to gutter out in the dirt of the yard. By the time Frank was finished, several of the raiders were hunched over in their saddles in pain, and a couple of others had limp, dangling arms that had been smashed by Frank's shots. But the attack was still going on. As Frank jammed the rifle back in its sheath, he saw a tall, lean figure on the porch of the big house blazing away at the raiders with a six-gun. Even at this distance, Frank recognized Jeff Buxton. But then Buxton staggered and went down, the gun dropping from his hand. Frank couldn't tell how badly the foreman was wounded. Laura Flynn appeared in the open doorway of the house, her left arm in a black sling. Her right hand went to her mouth, and Frank figured she was screaming at the sight of Buxton lying on the porch. He couldn't hear her over the sound of all the shooting, though. One of the barns and the bunkhouse were on fire by now. Several bodies were sprawled out in the open, probably the guards Buxton had posted who had been caught and gunned down while they were trying to give the alarm or get to cover. A bitter taste filled Frank's mouth. If not for the bad luck that had caused Buxton to blame him for Howard Flynn's death, the two of them might have been able to work together and prevent this violence, or at least meet it more effectively. Now, for some of those men who were down, it was probably too late. As Frank galloped toward the ranch headquarters, he saw Laura Flynn on her knees beside Buxton, cradling his head in her lap. But that wasn't all she was doing. As Frank watched, she pulled her left arm out of the sling, reached over, and picked up the gun Buxton had dropped. Frank hoped the raiders all remembered Sandine's orders that Laura wasn't to be hurt. Frank sent Stormy racing toward the house. As he did so, he began raking the raiders with well-placed shots from his Colt.
Hold back! Hold back! Let's get out of here!
Sandine's men had accomplished their deadly hit-and-run mission. The barn and the bunkhouse were both burning strongly and probably wouldn't be able to be saved. Several members of the Lazy F crew were either wounded or dead, including the foreman, Jeff Buxton. The damage they had set out to do was done, so they were ready to get the hell out. Frank swung the Appaloosa toward the porch, intending to check on Buxton's condition. But as he did so, Laura Flynn pointed the gun in her hands at him.
Shit!
Morgan! It's Frank Morgan! He's their leader! Get him!
Frank's jaw tightened, and he grated a curse through clenched teeth as the Lazy F punchers opened fire on him from the various places where they had sought cover during the raid. Luck was on Frank's side for a change, and none of the shots found him or the Big Appaloosa. In a matter of moments, he was out of sight. Even though he and Stormy were all right, Frustration seethed inside Frank. He hadn't been able to stop the masked gunmen from carrying out their raid. He didn't know whether or not Buxton was dead, or how badly the foreman was hurt if he was still alive. And perhaps, worst of all, Laura Flynn had seen him, recognized him, and blamed him for what had happened. By the time 24 hours had passed, everybody in this part of the country would believe that Frank Morgan himself had led the deadly raid on the Lazy F. The hole he was in just kept getting deeper, and it seemed that every time he tried to dig himself out, things only got worse. Who was going to believe him now? Even Jasper Culverhouse might not believe in his innocence anymore, once he had heard what Laura Flynn had to say. Frank had some supplies now. Maybe he ought to just ride on and leave this part of the territory behind for good. Let the folks here sort out their own troubles. But if he did that, the killing of Howard Flynn would always be hanging over his head, tarnishing a reputation that wasn't all that sterling to begin with. And even worse, he would know that he had turned his back on people who needed his help. Like it or not, Frank told himself as he rode through the night, heading once again in the general direction of Sandine's spread. He was in this fight to the finish. Laura Flynn fought back tears as Caleb Glover and AC Ducey carried Buxton into the house.
Careful with him.
Blood dripped from the wound just above his right ear.
Oh, please be careful.
We're being as easy with him as we can, Miss Laura. You sure you want us to put him on a divan? He'll get blood on it.
I don't give a damn about that.
Laura still clutched Buxton's six-gun in her hand and had his blood smeared all over the front of her dress. Her injured left arm ached like blazes, too, but she was barely aware of the pain. She had been acting purely on instinct when she grabbed up the fallen gun and began firing it at the masked attackers. The recoil of the shots had jolted her arms, causing the wounded one to throb. She didn't care. All she could think about was Jeff Buxton and whether he was going to live or die. He was still alive right now, and she was grateful for that. Anyone with such a gory head wound ought to be dead. But after Glover had bounded up onto the porch and determined that she wasn't hurt, he had slipped a hand inside Buxton's shirt and reported a fairly strong heartbeat. Laura knew that she would just have to trust the men to do the best they could with the fires, because she had more pressing business in here. After Glover and AC Ducey had placed Buxton on the divan, she leaned over him.
Can you tell how badly he's hurt?
Hard to say for sure with all the blood on his head. Could be he's just creased, though. The fact that he's still alive is a good sign. If that slug had gone on through, or if it was still rattling around inside his brain pan, I reckon he'd be dead by now.
The matter-of-fact way in which Glover spoke of such hideous possibilities made a chill go through Laura. She told herself that this was still a violent land, and those who were going to live here had to grow accustomed to dealing with the effects of that violence. She had to be strong, in other words.
AC Ducey, we need some hot water, some clean rags too. Hop to it.
The cook nodded and scrambled toward the kitchen. Laura lifted the gun in her right hand and looked at it.
Do you have some shells that will fit this weapon, Mr. Glover?
Yes, I do.
Will you reload it for me, please? My left arm hurts and I'm not sure I can manage to do that right now.
Yes, I'll be right glad to reload for you.
While Glover was doing that, Laura moved the sling around and got her left arm back in it. She slipped her right hand inside the left shoulder of her dress and reached down to check the dressing around the wound. It didn't seem to be wet.
How's that arm of yours doing, ma'am?
It hurts like hell, but I don't think it started bleeding again. It'll be fine.
I expect it will.
The cowboy closed the loading gate on the .45 and extended it butt first toward Laura.
I left the hammer resting on the empty chamber. Less likely to shoot yourself that way.
I'm not going to shoot myself.
No offense meant, ma'am. That's the way most folks carry him out here. Just a precaution, you understand?
Oh, well, thank you, Mr. Glover.
Laura took the gun from him, looked around for a second, and then set it on a small table beside the divan where Buxton lay, still unconscious. The Colt would be within easy reach there if she should need it. She wondered if from now on she would always have to make sure there was a gun close at hand. Putting that worry aside, she leaned over Buxton and slid her hand inside the open throat of his shirt. She felt a little awkward touching a man's body like that, but it was for medical purposes, she told herself. She rested her palm over his heart and felt the beating. It seemed strong enough, if a little irregular.
He's going to be all right. I know he is.
AC Ducey hurried in with a basin of steaming water in his hands and several clean rags draped over his arm. Laura told him to set the basin on the floor next to the divan, and then she knelt there as well. She took the rags from the cook, soaked one of them in the hot water, wrung it out, and then used it to swab at the blood around Buxton's head wound. The rag turned crimson. After a few minutes, Laura tossed it aside and picked up a fresh one. She worked quickly but carefully, cleaning away the blood so that they could get a look at the injury. Glover and AC Ducey leaned over her shoulders, watching intently. Finally, Laura had enough of the blood cleaned off so that she was able to use her fingers to part Buxton's thick hair and reveal the long, still bleeding gash in his scalp.
Just like I thought. That slug didn't do nothing but give him a good hard lick on the side of the head. It bled so much because that's what head wounds do. They're worse than just about anything for looking bad when they really ain't.
You mean he's going to be all right?
Hard to say. Sometimes when a fella gets a real bad clout on a noggin like that, it sort of scrambles up his brains so that he ain't ever the same again.
Oh, my God.
But I suspect old Buck'll be just fine. He got a pretty hard head. Probably have a ring-tailed howler of a headache when he wakes up, but that'll be all.
I hope you're right about that, Mr. Glover. I pray that you're right. I'll stay with him and try to stop the bleeding. Then I assume all we can do is wait for him to wake up and see how he is.
Yes'm. That's about the size of it.
Go on back outside and see how the men are doing with those fires. AC Ducey will be here to help me if I need anything.
Yes'm.
And Mr. Glover, thank you.
No need to thank me, Miss Laura. I was just doing what the boss told me to do.
With that, Glover nodded and went out, and Laura resumed tending to Buxton's wound. She didn't want to press too hard on it, since she didn't really know the extent of the injury, but she kept some pressure on the wound in hopes that it would slow down and maybe eventually bring the bleeding to a halt. Buxton showed no signs of coming to over the next few hours. Laura finally managed to stop the bleeding. She soaked a rag in whiskey and tried to clean the wound that way, but AC Ducey suggested pouring the liquor right on the gash. Laura took his advice, carefully pouring the fiery stuff right on the wound. Laura knew that even in his unconscious state, Buck was feeling the pain, but he still didn't wake up. Laura put a clean dressing on the wound, and AC Ducey lifted Buxton's head a little while she tied the bandage in place. Then he pulled one of the rocking chairs over next to the divan so Laura could sit down and still keep an eye on the wounded man. Laura wasn't sure what time it was, long after midnight certainly, when Glover came in.
Well, me and the crew were able to put out the fires and save part of the bunkhouse. The barn is a total loss, though, and we got two men dead, Smalley and Catlett. Half a dozen more of the boys got ventilated, but I don't reckon any of them are liable to die. Some of them will be off of their feet for a while, though.
Did we lose the wagon?
No, ma'am.
Good. In the morning, you can use it to take the men we lost into town and arrange for their funerals. In the meantime, do you need any help doctoring the ones who are wounded?
No, ma'am. I reckon not. There are several of us who have quite a bit of experience when it comes to patching up bullet holes. We can tend to it. You just stay here and watch over Buck, if that's what you want to do.
All right. How long do you think he'll be unconscious?
Well, no way of knowing. He might wake up 5 minutes from now, or might be sometime tomorrow.
Or never. I've heard of such things happening.
Yes'm. So have I. But it ain't going to happen here. I got faith in Buck.
Laura hoped that would be enough, but she couldn't quite bring herself to believe it. Glover went back outside. Laura continued sitting beside the divan, and although she wouldn't have believed it was possible, she dozed off sometime later, along toward morning. Laura's eyes went to the divan as terrible memories of what had happened the night before flooded into her brain. Jeff Buxton still lay there, unmoving except for the steady rising and falling of his chest. He was alive, but remained unconscious. With a shake of her head, Laura realized that it had been angry shouts from outside that had roused her. Caleb Glover hurried into the room. His hands were tight on the rifle that he carried, and his face was set in equally taut lines.
Mr. Glover, what is it?
Riders coming in, ma'am. And one of them is Ed Sandine.
Sandine?
Yes'm. And about half a dozen of his riders.
Then he didn't come to fight, or he would have brought more men.
He must want a parley, Miss Laura.
I'll talk to him. I want to hear his explanation for what happened last night.
Whatever he's got to say, chances are it'll be a lie.
Don't worry, Mr. Glover. I know that.
Laura looked at Buxton one more time, then marched briskly toward the front door. Glover stepped aside for her and let her go first onto the porch. Laura stopped at the top of the steps and turned a level gaze on the riders who had just reined their horses to a stop in front of the big house. Not surprisingly, Ed Sandine was in the lead. He was the type of man who always had to be out in front, no matter what he was doing. He wore a black suit, a white shirt, a string tie, and a dark gray Stetson. His boots were polished to a high shine, and his mustache had been trimmed recently. He looked handsome and distinguished, no doubt about that. Laura wasn't about to let such a thing affect her judgment, though. The men arrayed just behind Sandine were some of his hired gunslingers who had been masquerading as cowboys. One of them was Vern Riley, who was almost as big a dandy as Sandine and hadn't even been trying to keep up a facade of being a working puncher. Instead of a Winchester, he carried his usual shotgun in a saddle sheath. Sandine smiled, took his hat off, and nodded politely to Laura. The other men settled for ticking a finger against the brims of their hats.
Good morning, Laura. You look as lovely as ever today.
That's a bald-faced lie, Mr. Sandine. I was up most of the night. I have my arm in a sling and blood on my dress, and I'm sure I look terrible.
Laura glanced toward the barn that had been destroyed by fire and the bunkhouse, which had been heavily damaged, and had to suppress a gasp of surprise. This was the first time she had seen the destruction in the light of day. She glanced over her shoulder at the house and saw the bullet holes pocking the walls.
But not as terrible as my ranch.
I heard you'd had some trouble up here on the Lazy F. As your nearest neighbor, I thought the right thing to do would be to ride over and see if you need any help.
Who told you we had trouble?
One of my night herders noticed a red glow in the sky last night. And this morning he told me that he thought there'd been a big fire in this direction. I sent a man up here to have a look, and when he came back, he told me that one of your barns had burned down and that the bunkhouse had been damaged too. Was it an accident?
Take a look at those bullet holes. Does that look like an accident to you, Mr. Sandine?
I really wish you'd call me Ed, Laura. You did at one time. And to answer your question, no. It looks like your spread was attacked. Do you have any idea who was responsible?
The men were all masked. I didn't see their faces, so I couldn't recognize them.
She glanced at Riley and the other gunmen. It was possible some of them had been among the masked raiders. She would never recognize a man simply by the horse he rode, and in the dim light, with all the shooting going on, the last thing she would have been doing was studying the enemy's clothing.
That's terrible. It's a shame there's no real law in these parts, so that someone could put a stop to such outrages. It's probably rustlers or some other outlaws trying to intimidate you.
Perhaps.
I'd like to help you in this time of trouble, Laura. I've lived on the frontier a lot longer than you have. Now that your uncle is gone, now that you're alone in the world, you could use the advice and, dare I say, the guiding hand of someone more experienced.
Maybe you're right.
Maybe if I could come in, we could discuss what you should do next. Maybe even have a cup of coffee while we talk.
All right. Come on in.
As Laura turned toward the door, she saw Glover frowning at her, but he didn't actually say anything. Sandine dismounted quickly, throwing his reins to Riley. He followed Laura into the house.